It was the year of deep geeking.
The year of Feedbackapalooza.
The year we discussed our favorite show.
It was the year without Zima.
The year of great tequila.
The year of puns.
And a year of more interviews.
It was a new chance for fun.
It was the end of the series.
It was the year we made it to Crusade.
The year is 2009. The show, Babylon Podcast.
And welcome back to another Babylon Podcast. I am Summer Brooks.
I am Tim Callender.
And yes, it's me, Joe Straczynski, back for another episode of...
We have Vorlon. We have Vorlon.
Yeah, he's
that
been
Willard
so...
guy doesn't show up here. I'm here for you guys.
Yeah, he's been a Carlon for so long now.
Ooh, I like Mary. That. A Carlon.
Yeah.
I like that too.
Hey, look, since we're talking Vorlons, I have a couple things here that we can definitely get Jeffrey's firsthand knowledge about. Gary from Jacksonville, official Babylon Podcast contributor, sent a link to Prop Store of London. It's a website. They do prop replicas, but also, you know, actual props and costumes and all the rest. And this was the entry for the Ulkesh helmet. Are you ready? This is what it says. A lightweight Ulkesh Narenik, parentheses, Evil Kosh, stunned head from Babylon 5. This mask has been cast in a dense, hard foam to keep the weight down. It is believed to have been designed to be worn on a small actor's head. Now, I'm curious, is it an actor's small head or a small actor's head? Jeffrey, how tall are you?
I'm 6 foot tall, but size doesn't matter, I've been told.
And it goes on to say there's some damage from use on the set, including a hairline crack along the right upper edge. I'm guessing where they're trying to shove this helmet on a large actor's head.
Yes.
So what have you to say about that?
I'm a little confused. What was it about a foam head?
Yes, this mask has been cast in a dense, hard foam to keep the weight down. This is the Ulkesh head.
Yeah, the Kosh heads were always fiberglass.
Right?
So not a foam that I'm not saying that I just don't know what that is. A foam head that was used as a stunt thing and it cracked, huh?
Yeah, and it's believed to have been designed to be worn on a small actor's head. That just makes me giggle. It's like they, you know, hey, is that, who do we got to play Kosh? Well, we've got Billy Barty and we got Jeffrey Willer. Let's get Barty in here. He's got more experience.
Yes, well, clearly I didn't have the ego that required a large head, so it would be...
Yeah, maybe that's it.
I'm a little bit at a loss for that, but there you go. So what did they want for it?
Oh, I didn't even look. I was just giggling over the small actor's head. But it is in the section on their website that's under movie props, not under replicas. So they claim it to be the real thing.
Okay. If it was foam, would it be the real thing?
Well, I don't want to say that it wouldn't have been. There were not that many Ulkesh heads ever done. So possibly... I remember there was a head for the scene where all the light came out after his head came up.
Yeah, right, and it got blowed up.
Yeah, but you see, the blowed up heads were all fiberglass. I've got, yeah. Well, Summer has a piece of that, and I've got the one that didn't get blowed up. So,
and it's definitely not foam.
No, it's not foam.
Interesting.
So I'm a little at a loss for what that would have been for, but please, you know, there were many things going on many times, and it's very possible that it was something that was created. Unless what they're talking about is it's the foam positive that's used for the casting of the fiberglass. You with me?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That, you know, when you lay the fiberglass over it, so maybe it's the, well, you people that do that stuff, is that a positive or a negative? I'm not sure, but it, you know, you lay the glass over it. So yeah, it's possible right. that it might have been the thing with which the mold was put on, or the thing that, well, however you say that, the mold.
Yeah,
was
they
made.
form the helmet on it. Yeah,
thank you. Or, the form, right? Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's possible.
Well, here's another one for you. Now, this was again following the rabbit hole that is the interwebs, and I ended up on a blog called IO9.
Oh yeah, good and, stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And this was. Trying to make the long story as short as I possibly can, but it's me talking, so you know how that goes. Basically, it was a post about the 10 coolest aliens done on a budget, and Kosh was listed at number 5.
Wow.
Right.
Who was done better?
Number 1 was the alien from Alien, which to me is debatable because they probably spent on that outfit what you guys spent in a year.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, I think that's not quite playing fair. But anyways, I was going through all the reply posts, and somebody had posted this. There's a legend that the Vorlon puppet was so annoying to work with that when the show was over, the Babylon 5 crew gave it an Office Space style send-off. The fiberglass shell was said to have been tied to the back of a truck and dragged around a parking lot and then attacked with hammers and such.
Wow.
Wow.
Now, first of all, when you consider Vorlon puppet, are they talking about the outfit or Jeffrey?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it wasn't me, but I'm a little hazy on all my facts from way back then.
Well, but it wasn't a puppet, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's debatable.
But he wasn't
going
to work with, so.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, still to this day, if you go to the Uber guide,
the Lurker's guide.
Lurker's guide, it still says that I was animatronic.
Well,
so like
I
you could go to Disneyland
in the same
and
room
go
as Disney's Lincoln. Yeah.
Exactly, right. That's what I was thinking, right. So,
but I would think you'd remember if you tied that outfit to the back of a truck and drag it around.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not. Yeah. Okay.
And it wasn't so cumbersome. The story is better than the fable of dragging it around. The fact that it was so cumbersome to work with and so bad. And no, that's just good stuff though. That's just good old fashioned lies that are better than the truths.
Well, you know what Herr Goebbels said, you repeat a lie often enough, it becomes the truth.
There you go.
Yeah. So
wait, does that make us the conspiracy theorists who keep fighting to get the real truth out there?
Yeah. Babylon 5, man, they faked the whole thing. It was really a soundstage in LA. I'm not kidding, man.
No, we know the truth about the Vorlon. You've got it all wrong. He wasn't a puppet. He was real, man. He was real.
And he's got a big head.
That would make Tim the Mulder character and Summers the Scully. That's great. I like that. They both have posts. We need a new, you know, Babylon podcast. Oh, I want to believe.
Oh, my goodness.
You can't believe it.
Nice.
All right. Well, now that we've dispelled those rumors and lies, what do we have coming up tonight?
Or continued them. We might have perpetuated them, actually.
Yeah, that could be true. So. Yeah, we'll see what the feedback gives us. So what have we got on tap for tonight, gang?
I have a very special guest. That's the reason I've made a valiant return here, is one of the nicest people ever put on the planet, has a great affection for all things sci-fi and a special place in his heart for all things Babylon 5. And I will introduce him to you when we return.
Yay.
So Ghost infected Frank. He passed it on to the other guys and I got it from his corpse?
Right.
Hello, Echo. How are you feeling?
Did I fall asleep?
For a little while.
Previously on Heroes.
You had to go and be the detective, didn't you, Matt?
I'm not an aggressive person, but...
Ugh, man, there's just way too much on all
like
these channels.
Things, but only in-game.
Everybody lives for oaths. Just this one! In your dreams, Nutloaf!
Bite my shiny metal hat.
Sometimes I get visions.
Walter, what are you doing? What you learn, son?
I wish there was some way to find out what's really worth watching.
There is.
What? Who? What was that?
Tuning into Sci-Fi TV is the viewer's guide to genre television.
Where is that coming from?
With its spoiler-free quick reviews and water cooler and the spoiler-filled in-depth back porch discussions, Tuning into Sci-Fi TV is the only resource fans need to know what's on, what's good, and what's coming soon in science fiction and fantasy television.
How did you get into my house?
Join Kevin, Wendy, and Brent each week for the latest in genre television.
I'm calling the police.
You can find Tuning into Sci-Fi TV at tuningintosci-fi-tv.com.
No, seriously. How did you get into my house?
And we're back. I have a very special guest. Now, I wasn't lying. This is truly one of the great humans on the planet. One of the nicest people, the purest heart, the greatest level of integrity, and he's adorable. Besides all that, I want you to meet Gary Hassan of Lightspeed Fine Arts. Gary, this is Tim, Summer, and Michael. Welcome to the Babylon Podcast.
Well, Michael, compliments will get you everywhere. Thank you.
Hi, Gary. Thanks for being on the show with us.
Okay, so let me set the stage here. Gary owns Lightspeed Fine Arts. Lightspeed Fine Arts. You'll find everything you need to know about it at lightspeedfinearts.com. And this is truly some of the finest, coolest, bestest ever sci-fi art that's ever been done. Everything has a very realistic touch to it. And why is that, Gary?
Well, we wanted to make all the artwork as realistic as possible so that the fans could see, their favorite actors or their favorite scenes from their favorite TV series or the movies, and be able to put it on their wall and kind of still, relive and relive the memory of that particular show that they loved.
I mean,
so we have to make sure we have the best art.
You do. And you obviously have a bunch of talented artists that work for you and with you that it's almost three-dimensional. I mean, the artwork jumps off the canvas. I mean, it's not like just 2D. It's a very, very interactive look for being a two-dimensional object.
Well, we're very fortunate to have the top guns working for us. I mean, these guys are Emmy Award winners, Academy Award nominees. These guys are the best. We have one of our artists Keith Birdsong is one of the few living artists that's in the Smithsonian Institute in Washington, D.C. for his artwork. So, we use the best guys, the guys that actually do the art on the shows. And, they're just brilliant, creative guys. And then we come up with the ideas that, in our team at Lightspeed, and then we choose which artist we think is going to be the best at, making it, make it really realistic. And a lot of the guys that, do our art actually do the artwork on the shows. Like Robert Stromberg, who does pretty much all the alien worlds for Star Trek, who's created like worlds like Cardassia, Romulus, Bajor, the Borgs, and the like. So we get the guys that are actually, hands-on and creating the fantastic stuff that you see on television and in movies.
Yeah, you also work with a very good friend of Farpoint Media, our company here. Dave Dorman is a good friend of ours,
Dave
does great stuff. He did the Star Wars stuff, right?
Yeah, Dave is a brilliant artist, and he's legendary. And that's the kind of people we want to work with. The legends, living legends.
So as I'm looking at your website here, I'm seeing Stargate, Star Trek, Enterprise, Star Wars, Farscape, Lord of the Rings, Xena, Hercules, 2001. It goes on and on and on. And then there's this little show at the bottom called Babylon 5.
At the bottom? I thought that was at the top. Could be at the top. I don't know who did that.
You're going to have to say something to somebody.
Well, Babylon 5 has always been one of our core properties that we've loved to work with, And we were very fortunate that Joe Straczynski allowed us to do the artwork for the show, for the at least for the fans. And he was very, you know, selective on who he had do work and what kind of products that he allowed for the show. So we were very fortunate that he allowed us to, and he chose us to do that kind of work. And I love that Babylon 5 art that we created. And as you know, you're one of the characters in the show, and you're actually in one of the prints. So we've had great success with those. And even at today's show, even though Babylon 5 has been off the air, we have our fans buying those products still today, and they love them.
So, Gary, how would you?
Timeless.
Gary, how would you? How would you go about? Well, tell us the story how you got involved with the B5 people to get them on board with Lightspeed.
Well, actually, it all started off. You know, we did basically we were an environmental art company to begin with. We were trying to make, you know, send a message to everybody about, you know, quality of life issues, saving the planet, saving wildlife and sea life and the like. And then Gene Roddenberry discovered us and loved our work, saw our whales in space and the like, and then he got us totally in a different direction working with Star Trek. And then one thing led to another. George Lucas contacted us to do Star Wars, and then it just went on. And then we said, wow, you know, Babylon 5 is another fantastic show, and we asked them, would they like us to do, you know, the official cast portraits and some of the ship scenes and things like that. And they said, yes, let's have you do it. So it's kind of snowballed ever since Gene kind of discovered us. And he was a great inspiration for us. And it's led to all these other, you know, shows and wonderful studios that have allowed us to do work for them.
How long have you been doing this business?
I'd say we've been doing it about 26 years now, just over 26 years.
Wow.
So you personally, Gary, have you been a science fiction fan for a long time, or is this something that you've grown to appreciate in how the business at Lightspeed has evolved?
No, actually, you know, I've been a science fiction fan since I was a kid, and the only thing, the things that I do in my life have to deal with my passions. And you know, Lightspeed was a product of, you know, my environmental art company, and you know, I had a passion, and I still do have a passion, and we still do work to promote, you know, environmental issues today. But you know, I love science fiction, so this was really easy to pick up, and you know, it kept the same positive life message that brought me into this, and what Gene's vision at Star Trek, you know, did for us. He had a positive life message. So did Babylon 5 with Joe. And so we basically do series, and we keep to the shows that basically have positive life messages to give out to you know, fandom and to their audience in general.
Hmm. So today you just flew back. Was it today you just flew back from Atlanta and DragonCon?
Actually, I flew back last night. We had an amazing show in Atlanta. Pat Henry, who does Dragon Con, you know, I've done his show from the very beginning, as I've done with most of the fan shows. I kind of, you know, started with them from the very beginning, and I've attended pretty much all of them when they were just, you know, infantile shows to the mega shows they are today. But this guy is one of the class acts in the country, putting on these amazing shows. And as a matter of fact, you know, Lightspeed also brings actors to shows, and we represent people like Bill Shatner and Leonard Nimoy, Kate Mulgrew, Avery. But we also work with our Babylon 5 characters and the like. And I brought Bruce Boxleitner and Tracy Scoggins to Dragon Con. And hey, and actually, you know who else was there? Was Peter Jurassic and Stephen First and Claudia Christian. And we all got together, as a matter of fact, for dinner on Saturday night, and it was wonderful.
Well, you don't just throw that out there. So tell us a little bit more what's going on. Come on, give us a report.
Well, it was just a great, great time. I mean, you know, with the Babylon 5 cast, you know, everybody's doing different things these days. You know, Stephen First is just did a new. He's doing producing, directing, But I guess he's got a new, he just did a new, a new movie with, Miss Diaz.
Cameron Diaz?
Yes, Cameron Diaz. And he's been doing a lot of films lately. Bruce, you know, has been doing guest stars, guest performances on shows like Chuck and the like. But he's also in the new Tron movie, the new Disney Tron movie that's coming out. And, you know, Peter is living out in the Southeast today, and Claudia is back from England after doing so many TV series and movies over there. She's kind of back in Southern California where she kind of lived in. So we all had a nice time getting together and just catching up.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Was it a good turnout?
Huge. It was their biggest.
Really? So even with a down economy, the people are still flocking to DragonCon.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they had, I'm sure Pat broke over 40,000 people this year. And, you know, Bill and Leonard were the big magnets. Though we did have Patrick Stewart there. We had a number of the guests from Galactica. We had some of the Stargate actors there. And it was just a nice rounded out group of guests that we had. And as a matter of fact, they had a special awards dinner for Leonard Nimoy, which I was a part of. And they gave him a Lifetime Achievement Award there. And as a matter of fact, at my table, we had Kate, Bill and his wife, and Leonard, and Pat Henry, the promoter, and his family. And Peter Jurassic was the MC and did a spectacular job. And Leonard had some great words of wisdom, and he had some funny comments that the crowd just loved. But Bill and Leonard were really the attractions, I think, at this year's show. And they brought all the media. I'd say I had at least 30 different media contacts for that show. And we tried to get on every radio show with Bill and Leonard, and we're on PBS and CNN and a number of different shows, TV shows, and then we also had the newspapers, the blogs, and the like. So we tried to accommodate as many people as we possibly could. And these two guys are electric when they're on stage. When they're on stage, it's like it's a comedy act. They're just so funny, and they're such best friends. And coincidentally, they're both born just a few days apart in the same year. So it's just these guys have a chemistry that it won't quit. So
when you go to
really got their money's worth.
When you go to a show, Gary, like Dragon Con, and I know you hit some of the other big ones across the country, how do you decide what art you're going to take with you to sell there?
Well, it really depends on the shows. You know, if it's a Star Trek show, if it's a Star Wars show, if it's a science fiction show or a fantasy show, you know, we kind of bring the things that, you know, fit that particular theme. And then we also have our brochures with our website so that people can then tap into lightspeedfineart.com and they can see all the different things that we produce.
So what's your biggest seller, Gary?
It's really, it depends on what comes out. I mean, at the time. Historically, I think that, we had a great piece called Dante's Inferno that Gene Roddenberry personally signed. It was the only piece that he ever signed in his lifetime. As far as a commercial piece, and that was a big winner. Today, maybe the Five Captains from Star Trek, which has all the five captains signed by each one of the actors, and we're the only company that gets all five actors on an investment quality piece of this nature, and it's because we represent most of these actors that we get the signatures that nobody else can get. But even the Babylon 5 cast portrait. Always a winner because it's got 20 of the actors on the cast portrait, and it's signed by all the actors. And unfortunately, we lost our good friends Rick and Andreas, who no longer are with us, but who still live with us in this cast portrait, and we still have them with their signatures on it. And then we have some great Stargate pieces, too, with you know, the official cast portraits and also scenes from the show. And, you know, besides myself and another gentleman up in Vancouver, we're the only ones that Richard Dean Anderson signs for. So,
wow.
Again, we get the autographs that most people can't get. And then we, you know, produce some beautiful fan art that is really going to be around for a long, long time.
Go ahead, Summer.
So what inspires the scenes from the shows that you do? Because my favorite B5 one actually isn't the cast photo. It's the photo with the shadow battle around B5 in space. There's just something very, very captivating about that one scene for me. It's just beautiful.
It's full of life and action.
We love that episode. You know, that was called War Without End, and that was the name of that particular show, which depicts that scene. And, you know, you didn't see that particular scene actually in the show, but, you know, we saw the battle. And so we basically created, you know, an image of what this battle would look like if you had to stop it in time. And it was a favorite of a lot of the fans, and so that's why we did that particular piece. We do a lot of our pieces with the idea of, you know, we're all fan kids in the office. So we basically say, you know, what would be the highlight of this particular movie or this particular series or something like that? You know, for example, I have a great piece called I Have and Shall Always Be Your Friend, which is a piece with Bill and Leonard in it, but it has three different depictions of them in different episodes or parts of a movie. And we said to Bill and Leonard, which ones were the favorite scenes that you liked working together on? And then they said, well, it was this particular one, this particular one, this particular one. And that's how we got the idea of, you know, creating that particular piece. But it has to, you know, it usually has to do with, you know, what favorite scenes that we all remember in our minds that we loved, and that's what, you know, we wanted to have the fans remember the show from.
Okay. Gary, with that in mind, is there a particular scene from a particular series or movie that you guys have wanted to create but haven't yet?
Oh, golly, yeah, there have been. You know, we always come up with different ideas, and see, we're limited because, you know, these pieces take a while to produce. And, you know, there are scenes that we've thought about and pieces that we're still thinking about doing. Like, you know, there's always battle scenes and things like that we've always wanted to do, but maybe we just didn't do because there was some other idea that took priority. You know, the hot ideas always go to the artists first to produce. And, you know, there's so many things, you know, there's so many series episodes that were terrific, but it's just choosing, you know, the ones that, you know, we think the fans are going to like. And also, you know, we ask the fans, you know, we're doing these shows almost every other week, so we get around and we talk to people and we say, well, what would you like to see next? You know, and then we try to get, you know, consensus. And then a lot of our fans have inspired the pieces that we do. Women of Star Trek, for example, was one that everybody said, hey, we'd love to have one with all the ladies of Star Trek. So we finally came out with a piece that had them in it, and it's been very successful. And then we have the new movie, you know, the new Star Trek movie that we've done two pieces we've got coming out, and then a third one we're still working on that is probably going to be some kind of a battle scene or something to that effect.
Wonderful. So if I may, I know that we're taking you away from your family, and we appreciate that, but here's what I'd like to try to finish up with.
Sure.
You also, as I postured, you're one of the nicest men I've ever met, and you are just a pleasant person to be with, and I'm so grateful to call you a friend. But
Thank you.
You back that up each year with a wonderful charity event you do. I think it's coming up December 5th and 6th this year.
Yes, it's our 10th annual celebrity charity event, whose basic beneficiary is the American Cancer Society. And I've been working with them for over 20 years, using art as a way to raise money and awareness for the Cancer Society. But this event is basically something that I came up with, where I could use my contacts with the actor community and have everybody kind of get together at the end of the year and do something for those less fortunate. And I don't care what charity an actor would like to contribute to, as long as they're doing something as far as a contribution at the end of the year that would benefit whatever favorite charity they have. And if they don't have a favorite charity, then the funds go to the American Cancer Society. And then we have people coming from all over the world for this event. I bring in about 25 different actors, and 12 on one day, 13 on another. And, we have a real nice lineup. And we have people coming from the UK, from Europe, from Australia, New Zealand, from Canada, United States. They even have a young lady that comes every year from the Canary Islands. And it's a great event, and we cater it. And the people love it because it's a very intimate experience with the actors. And we have the actors contribute something of their own personal, from their own personal collections, or maybe it's like, for example, Patrick Stewart had a pair of running shoes favorite running shoes that he's donating, along with his hat from Moby Dick that he did with Hallmark, and he signed that. I was with him Sunday, and he signed that for me, and that's what his contribution is. Bill Shatner's always been very, very generous, getting us walk-ons on Boston Legal, and where people can actually be on the set of the show and be a part of it and have lunch and meet the actors. You know, it's things like that that you don't get, at your regular common everyday show that you go to. The actors actually bring things that have some meaning to them, or that would have some meaning to the fans, and then we auction that off, and all the proceeds go to charity. And it's not a big show, but we raise about $40,000 to $50,000 a year combined for all the different charities.
That's great. It's a wonderful, wonderful event that you do, and you have a fantastic facility. It's in Irvine, California. I encourage you to go out there and take a look and be a part of it. It's just, like you say, intimate is the best word. It's not like it's an actor fest or get your autograph, mayhem kind of thing. It's just a fun, it's like come to Gary's house and hang out. It's wonderful, wonderful.
And what's important to me, I want to make sure that my fans have and my attendees have a fantastic time. That I want them to have the most special experience with the actors. So I let the actors and the fans talk with each other and spend some time rather than just being hustled through a line, getting an autograph, and there you go again, someplace else. And again, we're going to be honored with your presence. I think this is going to be your third show, Jeffrey.
Yes, it will.
We'll be looking forward to have you attend. We got Jonathan Frakes and LeVar Burton coming, Walter Koenig, Dominic Keating, Claudia Christian. We got a whole big guest list and more actors to be announced. So it should be a great show.
That's great. Well, thank you for that. Thank you for joining us tonight. Thank you for being so good to the fans. Thank you for being good to the actors. And thank you for bringing some of the best sci-fi art to the public. We appreciate it.
You're truly complimentary. But thank you so much. It's my pleasure. And, fandom's a wonderful part of our world, and I'm just very happy to be a part of it.
Great. Thank you, sir. Have a wonderful evening, and thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Good night, Gary.
Okay, Jeffrey. Thanks again.
From the creators of Buffy Between the Lines Studios presents a new masterpiece in audio drama. This fall, in L.A., hell will break loose. The City of Angels cries out for help. Who will answer this call?
Angel Investigations. We help the helpless. What can we do for you?
An original fan production based in Joss Whedon's universe. A vampire with a soul and his fellow champions will face threats as never witnessed before. Get ready for this action-packed podcast that will blow your mind. Angel Between the Lines. Visit us at angelbetweenthelines.com.
And out.
And we're back with more Babylon Podcast. That was, I love hearing stories like that because I had no idea he was that into helping out the charities with the artwork and helping, you know, bring the actors to the fans. That was very cool.
He is a magnet of niceness. That's all I can say.
It sounds to me, with the roster of names that Lightspeed represents, he has to be. You know what I'm saying?
But it's the other way around. It's because he's such a nice guy that the top people gravitate to him.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's not that he has to be nice because he can, you know, that's the only way he can get these people. No. It's because he's genuinely just a superstar, a stud. And I just always feel great. I got to see him last week and I just walk away like 3 feet off the ground because he's just such an inspirational type person. He's just as earthy as they come. Okay. Enough of kissing Gary's butt.
Yeah. What are you getting out of all this?
What else you got? Nothing. Truly nothing. I simply have the opportunity to share because, you know, after I saw him, I was like, you have got to be on the show. You've got to be on our podcast.
Yeah, we'll have to get him again when he's got more time because I had more questions.
You bet. Bring him back. Yeah. Actually, maybe we can figure something out to do a call-in from the charity event.
Yeah, that'd be great.
That'd be great.
All right, well, we got some feedback to go through.
As always,
I know. It just never stops.
Let me guess. Like, Gary called.
It's like my mom's basement.
Gary,
I don't think so. No, I think Gary's pretty much given up.
No, Gary probably didn't call in much last week because he was preparing to go to Dragon Con himself. He's been posting the pictures he took with Claudia Christian and making other guys in the chat room jealous.
Yeah, well, nobody likes Gary anyway.
Yeah.
Our Gary, not the other Gary. The other Gary was a really nice guy, but our Gary.
Hi, this is Andrew from Tucson, and I wanted to comment on episode 167, Day of the Dead. I wanted to comment on the Lanier-Morden matchup. You had thought that maybe Marcus would be the better. I don't think so. Marcus, in my mind, is not dead, but mostly dead. So if he was resurrected, he would be mostly alive so that he would need a resurrected Andre the Giant to schlep him around Lanier's room, and there's clearly not enough space for that. Morden and Lanier, on the other hand, do share a common bond. They both turn to the dark side. I mean, shadows due to love. Why did Lanier betray Sheridan? Love for Delenn. Why did Morden become an agent of the shadows? He wanted to free his family from ultimate suffering in the midst of a folded, hyperspace, wrinkling time-esque fate. So I vote that the Morden and Lanier hookup was just fine. So all I can say till next time is, as you wish.
That was brilliant.
The whole Andrew the Giant thing. Yeah, we're just going to have to get ourselves an actor with a small head.
It actually connected with me because it sort of helps to define my career. You know, it's not dead. It's just mostly dead.
That's funny. Linking the Morden and Lanier interaction as a parallel to the Princess Bride in its entirety. That's awesome. That's awesome.
But I'm still not buying it. Morden Lanier is not a good...
I think Edmund last week pegged it. It should have been Narune.
Yes.
That's the absolute best idea I've heard.
Yep.
And I'm sticking by that one. Edmund, you got my vote.
Well, hello, Babylon Podcast. Curt in St. George, finally getting caught up here. Okay, about the whole Day of the Dead episode, Tim, really, I have to say, I totally agree with you. You know, 10, yes! No, 11 years ago when I first saw this episode, it left me totally flat. And I watched it again for the first time a couple of days ago, and it left me totally flat. You're completely right about the Morden character. It was a waste of a great character doing absolutely nothing. He should have been talking to Veer. He could have even been talking to Sheridan or Londo. That might have been interesting, too. Not as good as Veer, of course. But Lanier? It was utterly pointless. And if Neil Gaiman really wanted to put these two characters together, at least have them do something interesting. Why not at least start up a conversation like, what are you doing here? And Morden going, I have no clue. But then building from there until Morden finally, you know, dropped the hammer on him like, oh, I know why, because you're an aide to Delenn. I was an aide to the Shadows. I made certain mistakes, did things for the wrong reasons. You're doing things for the wrong reason. And of course, Morden would say it in a much cooler and slimier way than I just described. At least it would have made that revelation that Lanier was going to betray Sheridan fun and interesting. And frankly, even though the rest of the episode had, you know, a few good points here and there, I won't go over them. You guys described them in pretty good detail. But somehow, even these good points weren't enough to make the whole episode gel. Tim, I think you were right. In this case, the whole episode wasn't equal to the sum of its parts. And finally, I don't know how Penn and Teller got on the show, whether it was as you suggested, whether they were the first choice for Rebo and Zooty or not. I don't really think it matters. They weren't funny. I mean, that's just the bottom line. They're really talented guys, but in this episode, nothing they did worked. Anyway, that's about it. Kurt signing off.
It's because,
yes, I win.
Yeah, right. No, it's because them being funny would not have been suitable for a public broadcast.
Jeffrey, what do you remember of Penn and Teller getting on the set for that episode?
What I know now is that your fan club has now increased to 3.
That's what's really most important.
I will be guarded in my comments about Penn and Teller on set because I'm not a big fan of them. I've never really found them. I don't want to say they're not talented. I would not say that, but I will say they just don't connect with me. Their magic doesn't work for me. Their humor doesn't work for me. The whole silent. So I'm jaded, and my memories were kind of that to begin with. I think it's unfair, but they showed up, and I was already prepared not to really be all that wowed by them.
I will admit that my appreciation for Penn and Teller changed. I was never a big fan of the magic, but I loved the way they were doing the sleight of hand, just the interplay with each other, trying to distract the audience from what they were really doing. I just had something very intriguing about that to me, but I became a huge fan of Bullshit, that show that they do. I'm like, I absolutely love that show. I don't know why. It's amusing to me.
I remember not very long ago, just a couple weeks ago, I saw a rerun on West Wing with them on there, and it was eerily similar to the Babylon 5, to Day of the Dead. It really was.
Really?
You know, they were brought in as supposedly a little comic relief, but actually had a bigger message that they were sending, but really didn't think that they were making a message. They were just trying to say what they needed to say. Well, isn't that supposed to make you think? And if you think, you're supposed to be smart. You know, I was like, yeah, okay. That was just, it was, it's almost as if it was like product placement, you know?
Yeah,
that's really what it is. It's like product placement. It's like some smart publicist knows how to get them onto shows.
Plus, they were having Florin in the Oval Office.
There you go.
Hey, that's okay. I still want to go to Vegas and get them to sign my copy of the Day of the Dead scripts.
Uh-huh. Well, you go.
All right. Yeah.
Well, Hello, this is Neil from Bowie. I'm about halfway through listening to the podcast discussion of Day of the Dead. And like Summer, this was one of my favorite episodes of Season 5. It probably was my favorite of the early part of the season. I've already written 4 notes on the webpage for the podcast with information I saw on the Lurker's Guide of things that JMS wrote, such as things that he added in and things that were purely Neil Gaiman. And I also saw an interesting article on another website talking about where Neil Gaiman's inspiration for the episode came from. Anyway, I just wanted to mention that, and you can read this on the show sometime.
Yeah, I think we had a slight case of time dilation there because Neil did post up about the Jewish custom, which I don't remember off the top of my head, that served as the inspiration for the Brikiri festival, where the concept of linking areas so that you wouldn't be violating Sabbath rules or festival rules or whatever it was. I can't remember. That was the source of it. But there was no glowy, red, shimmery thing going on with the Jewish festivals, though. I'm sure of that.
Hey, we talked about this.
I know, and I'm still not buying it.
Hey, don't make me sick Fred Allen Wolf on you.
I ain't afraid of no wolf.
Bowie is in Maryland, right?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
All right.
He works at Goddard, Neil does.
Oh. Wow.
Yes, he does.
I like that. That's great. Yeah.
Well, this is Nelson Bowie. I'm thinking about the Day of the Dead a bit more. About the Morden Lanier situation. As JMS wrote, it was Neil Gaiman's idea to work with those characters. So, but of course, if JMS had thought strongly some other way, then he might have suggested that. So he went along with it. The business of possibly having Marcus there instead of Morden, well, Marcus, JMS told the actor that he would not kill Marcus, so Marcus has just been suspended animation. And that's the way he wanted to be there, and it would have, wouldn't have been right to have him definitively dead, as even though it could have been a bit, like Tim was saying, that Marcus didn't know where he was. But that might have made it a bit too complicated. Also, if it was Marcus there, then perhaps Lanier would have believed him. And while Morden there, he didn't told him that he'd betray him. Lanier just shook it off and didn't believe him. And then, ultimately, he did betray him. So, yeah, I think it works for me.
Well, no, I don't think Lanier would have believed Marcus, because we saw back, what was it, Ceremonies of Light and Dark, where Lanier confessed to Marcus. You could see the look on his Marcus face going, yeah, right, I'm not the only one here in denial.
Yeah, right. Uh-huh.
But no, we could have expanded our horizons a little bit and had Marcus show up. And it would have just been a very, very curious out-of-body experience. He's doing astral projection because, his body is physically kaput, but his spirit can still walk about. I am so reaching, aren't I?
No. See, in my mind, that just only feeds the ambiguity.
Yeah,
wrong with that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Here's the way I always wanted this to happen. I thought Joe should offer up a bit of an homage to Star Wars. And like Han Solo, Marcus should have been like this frozen statue thing that sat in the corner of Med Lab. And from time to time, late at night, everybody would sneak into Med Lab, steal some pills, and then talk to Marcus.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
Marcus would never answer back, but it would have given everybody such great insight.
Marcus as wall art. I love it.
Exactly. That's the way that needed to play out.
No, except that the space is tight in
Midland. But alas, so I'm just an actor with a small head.
Or a small actor with a head.
That would have been great, because you'd have Marcus hanging up on the wall. Every now and then in the background, you'd see some little lab tech just checking the little blinky lights on the side.
Yeah.
To show that the vitals are barely there, but he's still, you know, he's still kicking, just barely.
Right. Yep.
And then he could have appeared to Lanier as a blue hologram. Awesome.
Exactly.
Perfect. Oh my God, that works. That works. I like that idea. Okay, somebody out there has already written the fanfic for it. I know it.
Well, maybe that's what Gaiman was trying to do. He's actually trying to do some slash fiction, some Lanier Morton slash.
Oh, you went there. That's just wrong. That's wrong.
Well, they were behaving like an old married couple. Morton's sitting there drinking coffee, and Lanier's ignoring him.
That's wrong.
Hello, this is Neil from Bowie. I found my Day of the Dead annotated script, and in that, you know, Gaiman wrote Neil Zoot, and find his name on it. I was just comparing that to what was in the other voices volumes there, and it looks like they are the same annotated script, except the numbering in other voices is continuous throughout the whole script, while in the Day of the Dead script book, it renumbered at every act there. And one interesting thing of the annotations, I mean, most of the annotations are interesting, was the point in the script where he says that we can see Adira's back, and then in the annotation says, no, we can't. And I remember that being mentioned either in one of the JMS interviews, either with you guys or MIT, I think it was, that was something which they couldn't show was Adira's holes. Anyway, that's all.
That took all the romance out of it.
Really, that was rather anticlimactic and direct and funny.
And now Neil's just showing off. Signed script. All right, then.
Hey, Babcasters, it's Arkel, listening to the episode where you're talking about Day of the Dead, the wonderful episode written by Neil Gaiman. I love it. I completely disagree with Tim on that, but although he does kind of sort of have a point about the Lanier and Morton thing, I'm not quite sure why they went in that direction, seeing as I don't think Lanier and Morton ever really had any contact during the course of the series. I think a way they could have fixed that would have been to have Morton visit Veer, like Tim was suggesting, and then, you know, just have basically Morton there just trying to tease Veer and trying to get a rise out of him, and Veer just completely ignoring him, until towards the very end when Morton throws in the, oh, by the way, your friend Lanier is going to betray the Unleashed. And then later, Lanier and Veer can be in, like, you know, the area where Lanier's going to be going to his ship to leave again. And, excuse me, and he asks Veer, you know, what happened, what his experience in the Bracari Zone was. And Veer will think about it for a minute, and he'll just say, nothing really, just an old family friend. That would have been interesting, I think. Of course, you know, I have a lot of great ideas. Trouble is, most of them suck, so I don't know. But yeah. Oh, and in defense of Summer, I don't get the Three Stooges either. I'm much more of an Abbott and Costello fan myself.
Mm-hmm. Abbott and Costello, except for the Who's on First routine, just never did much for me.
I like Abbott and Costello better than the road pictures, the Bob Hope road pictures. I never got those. I really didn't.
I don't think I've ever seen any.
But the long Who's on First, perfection. Just yeah. Total perfection.
Very funny.
And Arkel thinks you're wrong.
Yeah, but he also admits a lot of his ideas suck, so I just put that in the pile of suck.
Ooh.
No, he agreed with me. He thought Veer would be a better choice than Lanier.
Well, hello, Babylon Podcast. Curtin St. George. I'd fallen behind on a number of podcasts, and I'm just catching up. I wanted to respond to something that JMS said in his interview about TNT and how they weaseled out of their contract. I can remember the fifth season of Babylon 5 looking at TNT's schedule of the shows they had on the time and thinking, they don't have a damn thing on that station that I want to watch other than Babylon 5. And it wasn't just wrestling that followed it. I remember all they seemed to have were reruns of other shows and made-for-TV westerns starring, I don't know, Sam Elliott or Tom Selleck. Well, anyway, what I was thinking, and you can ask Jeffrey this to confirm it, with today's technology, TNT, or any major TV station, wouldn't have to wait an entire season to find out that viewers for one show were ditching the channel and not coming back as soon as the show was over. I would guess that with today's technology, after 3, 4, 5 episodes, a trend would be established, and the executives at the TV station might start thinking right then and there about how they could get out of their contract and cancel that show. So, as bad as it was losing Crusade, it could have been a lot worse. If the TNT execs had realized that the Babylon 5 viewers weren't sticking around for wrestling and anything else, and their regular viewers weren't tuning into Babylon 5, they might have killed it in the middle of its final season. So I guess we should be thankful for what we did get.
Jeffrey, go ahead. You know, I thought TNT's commitment to, as I recall Joe saying, TNT's commitment to the fifth season of Babylon 5 was solid one way or the other because the show had basically already been paid for. They weren't on the hook for any of the monies, right? Summer? I mean, and that was the difference between it and Crusade, was that Crusade was being underwritten in part by TNT. In other words, their financial asses were on the line much more than it was for that last year of B5.
Was it completely paid for, season 5? Well, no, they had to have done it up front. They were set.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is, okay, not paid for up front, but all the significant costs, building sets, you know, establishing the cast, blah, blah, blah. You know, all that kind of stuff, all the hard stuff had already been done. You know, the show is being delivered to them. It had an audience. You know, they didn't have to worry about anything else. You know what I'm saying? That's the impression I got, was that the other thing is, and I remember reading this somewhere, is that the guys at TNT that were pushing for B5 and Crusade were like the West Coast office, but the decision was ultimately made by the Atlanta office, and it was like two different kinds of mindsets going on there.
I remember that. I remember hearing that or reading that.
Yeah, and that was part of the problem too. Was the guys who were counting the beans didn't get the show. But the other thing is, I understand. I mean, that TNT had a pretty good idea early on that that's what was happening with Crusade, was that the audiences were not sticking around for one or the other. You know, that basically they're, you know, the B5 fans would troop in as the TNT fans would troop out of the room, and an hour later the two groups would switch. And that's why all those notes were coming in early on in the show, was they were trying to force the issue so that they didn't have to stick with that 13-episode commitment, and JMS never gave in on them.
Oh, well. We got what we got.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's the cat's already out of the barn door now, so...
Yeah.
That's it.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go. Thank God.
We got time for some emails?
Nope.
All right, well, let me share this one riddle. This will take real quick. Brian Denmead asked this question. What does a Pac-Mara say when you give him a cold shoulder?
Thanks for the snack.
Thank you. I'll have another.
Yep. Good. Yeah, pass the salt is what he...
That's a strong finish to a great show, Tim. Thank you very much for that.
Now, thank Brian for that. I'm just the messenger.
You
realize has there been any other traction on the Pac-Mara and the zombie thing? Would a Pac Marat eat a zombie?
We haven't gone there yet. I don't know. Nobody's emailed anything in or commented on it.
Really?
Because I'm
even thinking about that stupid idea. It's just...
Well, Brian also commented that he thinks a Pac Marat as a movie critic would love every zombie movie ever made.
Well, there you go.
You know, but...
It'd be like the Food Network for him.
And we have established that zombies are undead, so that they're not living, which means a Pac Marat could eat a zombie.
Yeah, so it's fast food, sure. You got it.
No, it's healthy food. They're free range, remember?
Oh, yeah, free range zombies. That's right.
And you realize that, Tim, since you are the resident artist, remember how Marvel did, you know, their characters as Marvel zombies? I think someone needs to get a little inspired and give us some B5 zombies.
B5 zombies. Oh, my God.
That would be awesome. Right. Mm-hmm. That could go at the top of the Babylon Podcast website, is you put those new characters up.
There we go.
That'd be great for a Halloween banner.
Oh. We have to find a reason more than just once a year to bring that out.
We'd have the special zombie episode.
I like that.
Well, we could bring it back on the Day of the Dead.
Or maybe we should just do B5 characters as vampires, because that's highly popular right now.
It is.
Blood Along 5.
Oh.
You know,
I never drink.
You know, Halloween is coming up. Maybe it's time to do some sort of maybe a contest for, you know, the best zombie Pac Marat story or
animation, there we go,
or whatever.
I'm thinking fan art. It's got to be zombie fan art.
That'd be good.
Which we could just shorten down to just fart.
What would a zombie fart? Oh, never mind.
It smells like brains in here.
Are we still on the show, or is this over with now?
I think we're done now.
We're done.
Okay.
If you want to contact us with your submission for Babylon Zombie fan art, that email address is babylonpodcast@gmail.com.
1-800-FART.
Come by the website, BabylonPodcast.com. Leave your comments. Check out the other shows and other news we have there. FarpointForums.com is the place to join in the never-ending 83x9x12 thread. And, of course, if you want to try to squeeze your voicemail in between Gary and Neil, that phone number is 206-338-2259. That's 206-338-2259.
Dear, that I was right.
Yeah. And we'll see you next time on the other side of the zombie jump gate.